Hello. We got me and Mando here today, and that's it. Hopefully all the audio is working well. Are we good, Mando, or what?
I think so. I think everyone in the audience can hear.
We had some
technical difficulties maybe
started off, but I guess we're good. I don't know.
I like the bunch of penguins here.
Yeah, no, Luke sent me a bunch of stuff. He asked for my address, and I willingly gave it over, and he sent me a bunch of random shit. My dog likes a plushie. Got some hats and like a Letterman jacket. I'll have to bring it out next time. It's a pretty aggressive jacket, but maybe you'll see me wearing the streets pretty soon with my Robit hoodie.
I saw Size Chad became a bit of a model as well in Web3. He was rocking whatever it was, the NFT gear from Creature World, was it? He's become like
No, I mean, the guy's got a chin that can, you know, cut a diamond, so. I don't know. He's a great model for that kind of shit.
You like the look of that arc and you were like, yeah, I'm going to get a piece of it for Pudgy Penguins.
Yeah, of course. That's how it went down. Anyway, we got episode 40 here. Why don't you talk about our sponsors since we don't have OSF here? What? Maybe you could give out those codes to our loyal listeners.
Yes. Yeah, so we are sponsored, as always, by Robit. They are, you must have heard them by now, probably the most well-known crypto casino out there at the moment. Betters getting hacked. Robit is doing just fine. You can obviously go on there and trade all sorts of stuff. You can do futures trading, which me and KBM are quite big in. You can trade NFTs. You can do loot box pins, which we're going to do some later. And then they have a full casino and sports betting. I know American football's coming back this weekend, so I think that's going to be a big thing for them. And I think I saw today that they are now the sponsor of Napoli, which is one of the biggest teams in Europe, as in they won the Italian league last year and they got pretty close in the Champions League. So Robit making some moves in Europe as well. So European football's back if you want to get involved in that. Anyway, they are a sponsor for this of the show. The first code for today is WAFOXEN5190. WAFOXEN. 5190.
Yeah, so obviously Alex Foxen's our guest today. We'll bring him up in a little bit, but I guess let's talk about the markets real quick, Mando. Actually, as we're speaking, Bitcoin just dropped 100 points. I think our show's more than 100 points. We're nuking a little bit here. I've been saying to short it. I don't know. You have been long it, I feel like.
But, I did a scalp earlier yesterday, but then cut it pretty like yesterday evening. It just feels as though it just can't even rally. It just can't even rally for a moment on good news. So
no. Yeah, it's.
I think it needs one more nuke, and then I think we're gonna go higher. But yeah, I think it needs a nuke first. It just feels as though everyone's expecting it. Everyone's expecting it now to go lower. So. It just feels a bit consensus.
Are they, though? Those comments when I put up that post earlier, everyone's like, oh, everyone's saying it's going lower, so it's going higher. That's just like everyone's comment. So who's saying it's going lower?
I think everyone says it's going lower. The timeline is horrific, man. Like, you can't be on Twitter at the moment and not think the timeline is just everyone's like, oh, it's the worst.
Oh, yeah. There's no one making any money. So, just by the looks of that chart, I mean, you get the ETF pop. It excels right back off. And I mean, like, just looking at the chart in a vacuum, it looks fucking horrendous. So, I don't know.
Yeah, it does feel as though we might edge towards, I don't know, 24 area for Bitcoin and then ETH. I don't know what that makes ETH, but maybe 1500, 1400 area.
Yeah.
That's an area I'm going to crap out of if it goes to there, man. I think it's for sure. At that level, I think it's a really, really good
buy. I don't know if it gets that level. That means like equities and shit have probably turned a bit too, and maybe the Fed has stopped raising, which will cause the market to probably actually go down, surprisingly enough. So I don't know. We'll
maybe.
See.
Maybe it depends on the macro at that stage. But yeah, I'm looking for an area to go properly all in here for crypto for sure. If it goes down more, that's definitely, because I also just think it. That a lot of shorts have been added. You can tell from the open interest. Like it's just primed. Just, I think for
red, red, red. A million ads in a row.
Well, we'll see. I think there'll be a point where you will be right and I will be buying, and hopefully then you switch long again as well.
Yeah, no, I will. When time comes, it's not for a bit though. Currently, I'm just betting baseball unders and losing every single fucking one. Pretty comical. That'll just happen.
Yeah, this is the music.
I don't know what that music was.
What did you say?
No, I heard music on my side. Maybe it was just my screen then. The baseball unders. No, those have been going poorly.
Is that like a constant of your betting? Like you've always been an unders guy?
Yeah, maybe it's the contrarian in me. I don't know. We don't need to get into that too much. It's just going to be a brutal topic. But maybe let's bring in Alex and get to the meat of the show instead of talking through my baseball psychology. How you doing, Alex?
Yo, what's up, guys?
Chilling, man. Yeah, Alex had some camera issues, unfortunately, but we got him here in the flesh and the voice. I don't know. How you been doing? Like, we met a while ago through Elliot Rowe. It seems like I meet a lot of the high stakes poker players, really a row with the mindset stuff. I mean, what's new? How's it been going? And what have you been up to?
Yeah, I'm actually fresh off of a pretty long break from poker the last month or so. WSOP is a grind like it always is. Went down to Florida to play a series after that. And then went out to Europe for a bit, saw Iceland, Amsterdam, a little bit of time in the UK. It was very nice to get some time off. I really honestly rarely do that. I think that a big part of my success in poker is how obsessed I am with it. So like in the last 5 or 6 years, I've probably taken like maybe a week off a year maximum. So this is weird for me, but it feels really good, honestly, to get some time to relax.
Yeah. Welcome break. I mean, like I feel the same way with trading. I say I'm going to take time off. Then all of a sudden I'm just back in the trenches immediately. It's hard to stay away.
That's something that you mentioned Elliot Rowe. I'm sure would be telling both of us. I know he tells me this all the time, that it's like that's your worst enemy to some extent. Some people have a hard time playing. They're like afraid of playing, but I'm definitely the opposite. I'm more afraid of not playing than playing. It seems like you're on the same page to a large extent. It's probably a lot tougher to manage, honestly, I think, because I don't know, you always want that dopamine, and not having that feels like you feel definitely a little empty for a bit, and I just love the game, so to me it's like it's probably my favorite thing to do. So it's like I'm almost like depriving myself of my favorite activity when I don't play. But I also understand that your mind needs a break, and it's healthy for both your performance and your mindset.
That's the main issue, I think. Like wherever your fucking poison is for dopamine, you just constantly want to do it. Like if it's for us, obviously, so we talk about trading a lot, but Matt, you just play poker when you're not trading and you do other crazy shit. What do you do to kind of satiate yourself outside the poker world?
I leverage trade actually. No, I'm kidding. But honestly, for a while, that was like my secondary, I don't want to say hobby, but like I was trying to make money at it. The last few months have been, or the last 6 months or so, the market's been so brutal. I decided 3 or 4 months ago that I was just going to focus on poker, because it is something where you only have so much, so much attention, so much energy that I'm sure, you know, KBM, you can attest to how like draining that is doing all the time. And I like, for me to go from, to have that in the back of my mind while playing poker was definitely not a good thing. You know, I would like pulling out charts on breaks and like, you know, even getting just that a little bit of emotional stimulation one direction or the other definitely is like a ripple in the pond of like a calm mind. Like it creates a little bit of waves. And I feel like it's a lot harder to have a completely unbiased, like focused mind when you go back to playing, if you have some big position hanging over your head that you're, you know, sweating a stop price or just starting to second guess your decision. It just plays a factor in your, you know, your mind only has so much RAM that I think for me, it was a mistake doing that stuff. Even though initially it worked out, you know, rather well for me, I just like for my like sanity and my long-term well-being, it was definitely, I'm definitely happy that I'm kind of out of that game now.
KBM, you're still doing it. So,
I mean, like Alex is hitting a lot of a lot of things I think about also, just even like all sorts of gambling, like sports betting, or like if you're doing like any of that on the side, like, you know, messing with your mental state for your main thing, where my main thing with my best arena is trading, and then you bring in all these other things and you fuck up your mood, or, you know, cause you to take shots or just not be at 100% on your game and where you're supposed to be because of something else small, because you're spreading yourself too thin, is definitely a hindrance.
But yeah, I mean, for me, I feel like one of the main things I realized is just how, like, how difficult all the individual areas are, and how much like full immersion and dedication to the, to whatever your chosen arena, so to say, is valuable. Because like for me, I'm naive and thought like, oh yeah, I can jump into, you know, leverage trading, and I'm like, you know, good at figuring things out. I think I'll be all right. And when if somebody were to say that, oh, I can jump into high stakes poker and yeah, I think I'll figure it out. I laugh at them. And so it's like the perspective of the you know, Dunning-Kruger is really, you don't know what you don't know. And I think I learned enough to learn that I don't know as much as I thought I did on that aspect. But it also just, yeah, like you said, it detracts from your ability to be as like at the top of your game and the other shit, and often ends up being a losing endeavor.
Yeah, especially at the elite levels. What are you going to say, Mano?
I was just going to kind of go into it, because I think we should give a little bit of history of the other shit. Like, you are an incredibly good poker player. I was reading before that you kind of, am I right saying you like won Poker Player of the Year 2 years in a row or something like that? 2018, 2019, some, which I thought was kind of a wild stat. But yeah, maybe we should get into your poker career when you first started. How you kind of got into the game, and then we can get into like your success over the last few years.
Yeah, sure. So I started playing poker basically like on a serious level when I graduated college. So I played football in college, and like I was always an athlete and had the intentions of playing, you know, football professionally, or my whole life I like wanted to be a professional athlete. Ended up playing football in college, getting a bunch of concussions, had to stop playing. And that was in my junior year of college. So I had like another year before I graduated, wanted to get my degree. So I finished up there, and like the last year I just kind of, you know, enjoyed a normal college life, because I didn't have that at all the first 3 years. I was, you know, I was at Boston College. So it was an ACC program. So I was probably 60 hours a week or more, you know, whether it be in the gym or the film room or at practice. So I basically had, you know, more than a full-time job alongside having to go to class and stuff, which I didn't really do too much, but did the amount that I needed to get through. And but yeah, I didn't get to live like, you know, any kind of normal college life. So I kind of took a year, that was like almost like a year off in my eyes. And then after that, kind of started getting into poker a bit more seriously. So that was in around 2014, 15. And I just, you know, grinded pretty small stakes online, like up to like $600 buy-ins or something. And then just was really obsessed with it. I, you know, probably put 16 hours a day into playing or studying. And when I'd finish my session of playing, I'd go watch like replays from a high roller. And I just like, yeah, got really obsessed and spent years like that. And just, yeah, got better over time, started playing a little bit bigger stuff live. And then actually had a pretty big breakthrough in my career when I started talking a little bit of poker with Chance, who's the co-owner of chipleader.com, which is our like coaching website that we create some content for. I had always like, you know, worked on poker by myself, which nowadays is pretty unheard of. Like, no, everyone has a big group of people, and they all have like, you know, big group chat where they talk about hands and all this. So I didn't have that until, I didn't really have that at all to the extent that a lot of people do. But when I first started talking with Chance, that was definitely a somewhat significant stepping stone, I think, in my career, just to have someone who was like respected in the community and like who I thought of as a really good player, that was kind of like I could bounce hands off of and talk to about concepts and things like that. It just increased my confidence to kind of do things that were maybe outside of the box that might have been frowned upon by, you know, a solver. In other words, like the GTO, the theoretical equilibrium would say not to do it, but knowing what a player is doing, knowing how they're deviating from what they're supposed to do, would it allow you to like basically make decisions that are above and beyond the game theory optimal, which I don't want to get too far into that topic, but for those who don't know it, it would take some time to explain. But for those who do, that's a little background there. But then, yeah, so then in, I guess my first big like poker score was in, I want to say 2017, where I won like 200K in a 2600. And I remember that was like I felt like I had all the money in the world. Like, I think I had half of my own action too. So I only got 100K and I just like, yeah, I felt like, wow, I made it kind of thing. That's like, actually it's funny. I've had a lot of bigger scores since then, but that's still the most like emotionally significant tournament score that I've had, because until then I had a bunch of close calls, and it's something that I think traders might not be able to relate to as much with poker. I think there's a lot of overlap, but the tournament poker element that's kind of like hard to relate to, in my opinion, is just how much variance can play a role in your outcomes. So obviously with trading, that you can make all the right decisions from a technical standpoint and the market can go against you. And however, that's like one trade, one unit at a time. In poker, the difference is like, especially when you're playing tournaments, you know, you lose, like you don't cash like 80% or so of the entries that you make. So that'd be like taking trades where you lose over 80% of them. And then most of the ones that you don't lose, you only win like 1.6, 1.7x your initial capital. So it's like, you're basically playing to hit the home run kind of thing. Like you're hoping to win a tournament and win 100 buy-ins or something like that. And if you get eighth place in like five tournaments in a row, it can come down to like one hand that's deep in the tournament that you lose this flip. And there's just often literally nothing that you can do. And you end up either treading water or going backwards as far as like your bankroll, which is definitely like a really emotionally difficult thing. And it causes a lot of, I think that's why so many people in poker have imposter syndrome. I still catch myself thinking that sometimes too, like with all the tournaments I've won and stuff, I still like, if I have a bad stretch, it's like, man, have I just been lucky all these years? And now it's finally like reverting to the mean. It's a psychological like mind fuck, really. But that's also what makes the game so great in a lot of ways. But you have to, you know, I was going through that early on in my career where I had all those close runs and I like it, like felt very much like I was, I was capable of playing at the highest level. But like, you know, my, wasn't sure if that was me, but my result, you know, my results were a lot of 12th places, and which, you know, you'll get. It'll be a spot where 12th place is like 15, 20K and first is like 500K. And, you know, the difference between 12th and first can often be one or two coin flips or something like that. So that was definitely that's probably one of the hardest things about tournament poker to deal with. Also, a nice thing about playing the higher stakes now is the tournaments aren't quite as big. Like when you're a low stakes tournament grinder, you're playing in like 1,000 person fields really regularly. And it's really tough to win those. Like no matter how perfect you play, you have to get pretty lucky to win a tournament like that. And all of the money is in the top, you know, few places. Mm-hmm. So breaking through to the smaller fields, like in, I guess in 2017, I chopped five diamond to 10K heads up for like a little over a million, which was like my real like breakthrough score. And then just kind of jumped into playing higher stakes tournaments and started doing well. And I feel like I got really lucky to be put in a position to be able to study the game like I did. Because a lot of people, you know, a lot of people just, I guess, never get that chance to move up the stakes. And it happened to me fairly early in my career where I hit some nice wins and just I had delusional confidence where I just thought I was, at the time, I thought I was way better than I was. And it allowed me to put in the work to get to be as good as I thought I was at the time.
Yeah, I think there's
a lot covered there, but
no, like there's a lot of stuff
rambling on. But
no, that was good. There's a lot of stuff to break down there. I think maybe we could start with like the tournaments, how high the variance is. I mean, people probably maybe they don't understand it. Like you said, you cash like, you know, only maybe 20% of them, and you're looking for these home runs. Then there's also the part about like you're traveling around the country or around the world. So your like routines are definitely tough to keep and your mental state is tough to keep. I'm wondering how you deal with not only the mental side of the variance, but then also how you keep a routine when you're traveling around. You're staying up like these are grueling hours too. You're playing for like 12 plus hours a day, sometimes into like the early hours in the morning. Like it seems like it'd be pretty easy for people to just really stray. And you're in a casino as well, where there's a lot of gambling and drinking and other things. So, like, I don't know. Why don't you touch a little bit on that and how you're able to stay at the high level and avoid all the vices and deal with the mental anguish of, you know, traveling nonstop and shit.
Yeah, that's definitely a major element of the game. It's like a game within a game in that sense, because it's not just about how you play poker. It's about how you manage your money and how you avoid these vices that you're constantly exposed to. And yeah, keep a routine, keep your body healthy, because you know you need a healthy, somewhat healthy body at least to have a highly functioning mind. And I think that's a pit that a lot of people fall into, is they don't stay in shape, or they don't, you know, they're out drinking all night and it catches up with them eventually. Some people can make it happen for a little bit of time, but it's very rare to see someone have a long, successful career of you know, living in that way, especially not to get to like the highest stakes. So, I mean, for me, I was like I said, I had an athletic background. So like working out was never, it wasn't like negotiable for me. Like that was just what I did every day. It was something that like, it was weird for me not to, I felt uncomfortable not to. So I guess I'd say that I'm kind of lucky in that sense where like I had so many years of just like forced workouts every day that it was like uncomfortable for me to be, you know, sedentary at all. So if I'm traveling to, it would be the first thing I do. Like I'd land in whatever different, like I can remember Monaco was one of the tough places where it's like land there to play a poker tournament. And the first thing I'm doing is looking up like, okay, where can I get like a week long membership to a gym? Because that's like priority number one. Because I really think without that, your brain just like you lose a few pips. Like you're not at optimal without a little bit of physical stimulation and even just like your mental health. Like the fight or flight response that you feel when you're playing a poker tournament is real. Like so much adrenaline, almost regardless of what the stakes you're playing. Like if you're competitive and you want to win, you're trying to conceal your emotions, you're trying to conceal all your physicalities and things like that. Meanwhile, you're trying to think about a million different things and basically outthink your opponent. And it definitely stimulates that adrenaline response. So I think it's really important to like burn that off in a way. I think if you don't have some form of outlet of that adrenaline, you're all your like dopamine and your your hormonal balances are going to get like destroyed, I think. And I've definitely had that felt that happen sometimes. Like if during WSOP, you know, it's tough because like you said, sometimes we'll be bagging at like 2 a.m. and I live 30 minutes from the strip. And then the next morning it starts at noon. So it's like you bag at two, you get to your car at, you know, maybe 2:30, 2:45 after like, of course, the valet there takes forever. And then I'm home at like 3:15, 3:30. Not easy to fall asleep right away. I'm very against like any kind of sleep aid that isn't like melatonin, basically. So I wouldn't take like, you know, I think that if you were to get into like Ambien or any kind of pharmaceutical like that, you're just like setting yourself up for, you're kicking the can down the road, setting yourself up for like a catastrophic issue in the future. Mm-hmm. So I've always stayed away from that, but it's hard to, you know, you end up getting to bed at like 4:30 a.m. You have to be there. You have to be leaving your house at 11:15. We're talking about like now less than seven hours to sleep and get a workout in. And you want to have your mind. So it's like, it's tough to choose what to prioritize in these types of situations. But when I've had that happen, I can feel how different my mind and my emotional like clarity and stability is just completely different. So I think for me, like the workout being non-negotiable is probably the number one thing to keep that, you know, in check. And honestly, I think to be a successful tournament player, you either need to be like really emotionally numb or somewhat delusionally optimistic, like one way or the other. You either need to just not care at all or just like have this completely delusional expectation that like today is going to be different than yesterday. even though the stats say different, even though like it's deep down, you know, very likely that like, you know, it's not, it's probably going to be another shitty day. Like, and that's tough. I think that's tough for a lot of people. And it was tough for me at first because like in sports, if you're better than your opponent, you win most of the time. Like, you know, you don't play a football team that's worse than you and just like lose 80% of it. Like, it's just ridiculous. Nothing like that happens. So it was a weird adjustment to kind of have to work with all that stuff. But I think that I think that's why it's important to have something like working out, because you can make constant progress, even though you know, cause in poker, you might work 12 hours a day for 6 months and lose money. Like, there's not much else in the world besides maybe trading that you could have something like that happen, where you're just grinding your ass off, doing everything right, and just constantly losing money. So having something that you know will progress forward while you're on this like weird journey financially is really like, I think, mentally stabilizing. And it's like, okay, I know if I go to the gym and I lift and I get there, my numbers are going to go up. I'm going to get stronger. I'm going to get in better shape. Whereas, yeah. So it helps to also just see poker as like each decision is your victory or loss. Like, if you make the right decisions, that's a win regardless of the outcome. And a lot easier said than done. I struggle with that constantly still, but that's how I would say I deal with that. And for me, like, drinking was once I got past like 20, 22 or something, I just really didn't, I kind of lost interest in that. Always been really focused on poker and kind of making my future life as good as I can. So that really never held too much appeal to me.
Have you got any tricks about how your mindset has changed? So I know you've talked about like your physical side of things, but obviously like you faced a lot of losses in poker, very similar to in trading. Like, do you have any tricks to kind of get yourself back in the right mindset after maybe like a big loss, or do you have any stories of coming back maybe after big losses? It'd be good to hear, because I know you obviously work alongside Elliot, who we've actually had on the show. I know you do Matt as well, but like, have you now built like a mental framework for having to deal with that sort of level of stress?
Yeah, I mean, I would say, like, honestly, as you were asking that question, the number one thing that came to mind is Elliot. Like, he's definitely the, when I go off track, I'll book a session with him, and that honestly, it's like you would think I'm like I have like a cut of his sessions or something, but it really is just like, that's,
I think at this so stage crazy. He owes us money. Like, he just owes us money.
Yeah, right. Like, a lot of people are shouting him out. Fedor, Galvan, everyone on the show.
I mean, because he really is like the best at what he does, and it's something that I would have, until I did it, I would have like kind of scoffed at anyone who touted him as highly as I do, because it just seems so ridiculous that it's like, oh, you know, you have months of bad beats and you're in this bad place and you go talk to this guy for an hour and all of a sudden you're better. It's like that sounds ridiculous, but it really is how it feels to me. And that's maybe somewhat of an oversimplification, and there are ways to like I do a lot of things. Like, I try to meditate and things like, you know, I think something like a cold plunge actually is really helpful for like resetting your dopamine and kind of like taking you out of all these thoughts. And I don't know, I always feel a lot better after, you know, spending 5 or 6 minutes in 39 degree water. Just something about it. It's that struggle and that grind that like pays off very quickly, like that you get out and you feel high. And it's like that there's something about that that is an awesome reset. But yeah, Elliot definitely helps give you like ways to talk to yourself, kind of ways to think about things. But a session with him is just like it's really like an amazing cure, I would say, for a lot of tilt and mindset issues.
So
I was just going to go into those 2 years where you like really crushed it, like 2018, 2019. It sounds
like you had, you just won $5 million.
But is there anything about those particular periods where you felt like you were in the zone, let's say, or like something you really took from those periods and recently, obviously, where you felt like you did things differently?
I mean, I think during those periods, I was part of my advantage that I had was I was pretty new to the poker scene, and I had a pretty good understanding of how most people would play, and I definitely played a little differently than the norm. So it was like, I think people struggled to adjust to that to some extent. But really, I think most of that is just a result of variance, frankly. I think that I'm a much better player today than I was then. I've the difference between number, like I've been in the top, I don't pay that close of attention to it, but so it was 2018, 2019, and then 2020 was like COVID year. 2021, I had to like skip the WSOP because of COVID again. Or because of bureaucracy, I'll say more accurately, but I won't get into that. So basically, I feel like the 2020, 2021 definitely were kind of like a wash. And then 2022, I think, like, even in those years, I'm like, I think I was in the top five or something like that. And really, when you get to that top 10 or so, it's like the difference between 10 and one in any given year is just like who runs better at the end of a tournament. Because, you know, I had a few tournaments where had I won them instead of getting eighth or whatever, I would have won that year or something like that. And I'm sure I remember there was a tournament where I played heads up with Chidwick in 2018. And it was in December. So it was like the end of the year. And we were 1 and 2 in the GPI rankings. And whoever won that heads up was going to win the player of the year. So it was like, that obviously shows like, yeah, maybe one of us had like a 2% edge on the other, like maximum. So it really is like as much as I would love to say I did something magical, I actually think that I'm like significantly better now than I was then. I just kind of got luckier for those 2 years.
Who else do you think are the best going right now? Who do you have the hardest time against when you're playing in a high stakes tournament? I mean, it's, you see a lot of the same people over and over. I think we asked a couple other guys these questions. We're always interested to see, like, you know, is it somebody who's GTO focused, or is it somebody who's trying to play exploitative, or like, well, what are the typical player archetypes that you struggle with or find the toughest?
Yeah, I would say that I think the like Nirvana, so to say, of poker player is someone who has a really good deep theoretical understanding, but also, like, in my opinion, to have the deep theoretical understanding, it means that you know when the outputs that a solver is telling you are incorrect, because everything that people can study in poker is like dependent on your opponent's response. So when you make adjustments to the responses, the outputs change. So like, it's just an input output system really at the end of the day. And I think that the players that understand that the best are always the toughest to play against. I think that, I don't know, honestly, no, there's no specific person that comes to mind. And this is just like, there's the delusional, like, whatever, overconfident side of me where I'm like, yeah, I actually can't even think of anyone. But part of that is also because there are a lot of great players, and it's at the highest level. It's like a weird thing in poker. At the highest level, it's kind of hard to stand out. Like there's like a, I'd say probably a group of, I don't know, between 20 and 50 players that it's fairly difficult to differentiate from one to the other as far as their ability. I mean, I think there's a hierarchy, but it's just the edges are so minimal, and it's really hard to say. I think that's why I love playing live poker the most, because I think you can gain extra edges from the physical elements of being in person with someone and just being like calm and collected in like under the lights on a stream or something like that can bring you that like little edge. Cause now, like, with the amount of poker content and tools that are out there, that we're like, you know, fighting over really razor thin edges and just anything that can get, and that's part of why I love like exercising and stuff like that. Cause I think that's something that gives me that like little bit of extra edge. And same thing with like, I always look at people when I'm playing. Like, I guess I'm kind of like known for that, for like staring at people. And I always get asked, like, are you trying to like scare people or intimidate people? And it's honestly like not that at all. It's just that I believe that our brains on a subconscious level are extremely good at absorbing like tons of information, and our conscious brain is only capable of analyzing such a tiny percentage of that. So that's where, like, when you have intuition and like a gut feeling or whatever, I think that a lot of people have mislabeled that as kind of like this basically fake, like woo-woo type stuff. And mm-hmm. and the reality is, in my opinion, that that's really just an aggregate of the billions of data points that your subconscious is absorbing over time. And you can't put it into words because you can't even think it. Like you see someone do something and you think, oh, he's weak, but I have no idea why. But somewhere in my subconscious, it's picked up a set of data points that align with a previous time when he was weak or something of that nature. So, that brings in a whole nother element of mindset difficulties, because intuition and emotion are so easily confused that, like, if you have a bias of like, oh, I want to be the guy that like bluffs someone, let's say, then you think someone's weak, so you decide to go, you decide to bluff. You think they're at the bottom of their value range or whatever, so you decide to bluff. Like, is that your internal bias of wanting to bluff them that's leading you to feel that, like, to drive you towards that? Or is it a genuine intuitive moment where your subconscious is picking up on something that you can't articulate? At the end of the day, it's really hard to distinguish between those two things. And I think that's why a lot of people just like forget it altogether. And they just say like, whatever, I'm just going to ignore all of that and I'll just play what the theory tells me to do. But again, that's where I think that there are extra edges to be had. So to me, the players that think in those terms are the hardest to play against.
Yeah. I mean, that's the best part of live poker, in my opinion, too. Those kind of things. I think when we had Chance on, he kind of plays a similar way. You're actually married to Kristen Foxen, who's also one of the best. She's the best female player multiple times. We got to get her on the show too, Mando. So you said with Chance, do you talk with Kristen like over poker hands too at home, or does work stay work, or does work and home mix, or what?
No, we're both way too obsessed with poker to keep that separated. we're talking about hands a lot. She's definitely been an instrumental part of my success as well. So it's pretty sick. We met in 2017, and we're kind of like just beginning to like to date a bit right before I went on like my first, you know, kind of heater. And I really think that like her perspective on a lot of hands has helped me a ton. And but on top of that, just it's poker is such a weird game. And as I've kind of outlined a little bit, it's like really psychologically difficult. So having like, you know, your girlfriend and now wife be someone who like just fully gets what I'm going through. Like you can say, I get it, and try to like, people can provide, you know, whatever, try to be sympathetic or try to, you know, cheer you up or something like that. But someone who like truly gets it, who's literally going through it side by side, is super valuable. And I think that's helped me a lot over the last few years. And I like to think that I've helped her in the same way. But yes, I consider myself really lucky to have found someone that we're, you know, I have that similarity as well as like so many other things that we, you know, get along so well on.
I can tell you right now, I don't know if I'd like to be married to someone who, when you're just constantly reading each other's body language, like you have all those skills. Like, oh no.
Yeah,
I
could never lie to her.
No buffs getting through, Chris.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, but there's it can bring you, I don't know, I believe to some extent in like a radical honesty where, now I'm getting too philosophical, but I think that's something that's like really it's liberating, and it makes you happier. Like when you're withholding things from other people, especially someone you're around, like, and I think this, like, I definitely have friends and people that I'm around that are like somewhat secretive or whatever, even on stupid things with like their significant other. And I feel like that's something that it's like a cloud over your mindset that it's just something that makes your overall happiness, I think, decrease. And I think that, so I think there's an extent of like, knowing that I couldn't ever lie to her, not that I would necessarily want to, but knowing that I couldn't is like liberating in a sense, because it's like, yeah, now I have like every action that I take has like an extra set of eyes on it, basically, in a way that's like, I think becomes a very positive thing.
Yeah, for sure. I was going to touch upon something actually, because you said that you obviously did some lever trading and it was taking up too much of your brain space, but you see that a lot. Like, even in our space, you see a lot of people who are involved in poker or some other like risk or strategy based thing like, I just want to kind of get into your framework to how you look at things. Like, what are the skills you think you've learned from poker that help you in life? Like, how do you assess things? Are there any, like, life hacks you and, like, your wife have found by being professional poker players that you think other people don't really look at life and maybe games or other things of chance the same way?
Well, the first thing that comes to mind when you ask that is just that the expected value equation. Like, it's something that I've brought into every aspect of my life that I think it's kind of amazing to me that people don't, like, when I stop and think and remember that other people don't always think that way, it kind of blows my mind. And an example is like, okay, so there's a spot where it says no parking and it's $100 fine to park there, but it's going to save you half an hour. And it's like, how often do you need to get a parking ticket to justify parking there and saving that half hour? Depends on what your time is worth, your hourly, all like it's a somewhat complicated equation that's different for each person, but something like that is a great way to optimize everything that you do. It's like, yeah, you know, the hedges need to be trimmed, for example. That'll take me an hour. I can pay someone $50 to do it. What could I do in that hour? That type of thought process can apply and just save you tons of time and money and also happiness. Obviously, that's the other complicated aspect of the equation is like, does this give me joy? Like, obviously, you're not always optimizing for money. But that's something that I think the poker mindset can be very valuable to is like thinking of everything in terms of like, basically probabilities and expected value. And it might sound like, I feel like that to some people that sounds like a miserable existence, but I think it's just like, it's actually just like.
No, I heard somebody on a podcast.
It's kind of fun in a lot of ways too. Depending.
Yeah, it's the game.
I think you cut out there just for a second, maybe just for me. But yeah, I heard someone on a podcast say something quite similar, which was, I think he was a CEO or he was an entrepreneur of some sort. And he was like, very early on in life, I put like a very high hourly rate for my time, like something like $500 to $1,000 per hour. That's how much I was worth. And suddenly that like completely freed his own time and he was able to be way more productive. But like once you set yourself such high standards for right what you can do in that hour, suddenly you actually... conversely, like your value of your time actually goes up even more. Now he's like, the value of my hour is worth way more than when I first started. And just because I set that very high level for like what I would pay myself per hour to do anything, that made like completely revolutionized how I started off in life. I'm not saying like to spend all your money, like but value yourself, value your time a lot more than you think you are, because you're like, if you have a set of skills or you have that drive or you have like an idea or whatever, like if it's poker or it could be anything, if you feel as though there is like something that could be worth millions of dollars at the end of it, your time is just worth so much. And I tell you, it's kind of similar to what you were just saying. It's like people do not optimize for that. They optimize for the immediate cost of things rather than like the expected value of their time.
Yeah, which is wild, and it's a concept that's been written about in like numerous books, like even the Rich Dad Poor Dad. I think it's a pretty popular book. That it's like that's a major premise of it, just like this mindset of abundance and value, valuing your time is massive. And I think that especially like obviously it doesn't make sense to do that if you're gonna like sit on the couch and watch TV. Like your time that's not worth that much money or really any money, but. But like, if you have something that you're working towards and you have confidence in yourself, there's the other side of it that you're actually like giving yourself an extra layer of responsibility by saying that like my time is worth $500 or $1,000 an hour or whatever it is. You kind of hold yourself to this like standard that if you're an accountable person, there's like a level of guilt that will come with not fulfilling that value. So like you're working on something and you're like you might get distracted and scroll through Twitter or just like watch a show or whatever it is that will distract you from your work. When you have this like expectation of the value of your time, it'll kind of keep you in line, I think. So I think those things tend to be self-fulfilling as well, which is like an added bonus to it.
Yeah, everything. Such a key to success and whatnot. We gotta talk about a little bit, since it's called Wrecked Radio, maybe we could talk about some of your largest losses and how you bounce back from those. I know we already spoke about like mindset and working out and how that helps bounce back, but maybe like some of the darkest times during your career, if you could like reflect on some of those. I know that's a tough thing to ask, but we do it with every guest. So just curious on that.
Yeah, no, happy to. Actually, I think that that's where you learn a lot from looking at these things. But I would say the number one thing that comes to mind is actually a trading experience where in, I guess, like 2020, like the COVID run-up, I started leverage trading and had a ridiculous like spin-up. I think I like 100x'd my account or something like that in not very long, and had got to where I had more, like significantly more money in my trading bankroll than I did in like my poker bankroll and like my life bankroll, basically, which was like, in hindsight, obviously that was a really big mistake because I was just like being overly aggressive and on the right side of a trend. And that's the reason why I ran it up so much. It wasn't like I had this newfound like magical skill. It's like someone winning the main event and thinking that they're, because that happened, they're the best poker player and they're going to start firing like 250Ks and 300K and all that. And like, you know, that's basically what I did. And I actually wanted to mention this before. It's something really interesting that I forgot to, it's a bit of a side of a tangent, but the toughest thing about trading, in my opinion, is that there are no stakes. You, no matter what your trade size is, you're trading against the same people that you would be if you're trading with large size. And I know there's like liquidity that, you know, elements that change things slightly, but like,
yeah,
that's something that's like you can't drop down to an easier market, really. Like they exist, I guess, with like, you know, some of the shit coins and stuff like that. But for the most part, you're just, you know, it's the same market for everyone. You're playing in the super high roller bowl when you're trading Bitcoin. Like that's who you're trading against. So that was something that I wish I had realized at the time. But yeah, I remember it was when Bitcoin had run up to like 42 and then tanked to like 31. This was in, I want to say, March of 2021, I think it was. Something like that. Maybe earlier, maybe January. Something around that time. And I just remember having, I thought I was a genius because I closed out all my positions at 42K, watched it tank to like 37 or something, and just went like all in. I think 36 maybe was the line where I expected a bounce, and just went like super heavy and just like ended up getting liquidated like $200 or $300 from the bottom in that spot, and probably lost like, I don't know, a few million in that, or I guess a lot more than that. And it was like, I just remember like not believing that it happened. Like I was like looking at the screen, like, cause I wasn't at my computer when it happened, and I came back and it's just like the account balance. Like I had moved some money around, so it wasn't like as catastrophic as it could have been. But I just remember looking at the account balance of zero or whatever, like one ETH or something like that, and being like complete disbelief. Like it was something that was, way worse than any poker loss ever, especially because when I lose in poker, it's like I mentioned before, if I make the right decision, I know that like that's all I can do, and that's satisfying to me. So in this situation, I was like the opposite end of that spectrum, where I knew I made terrible decisions and I played really bad and I punted away like way more money than I should have ever allowed myself to in a spot like this. And yeah, that was, I would say, by far the hardest thing. And it definitely made me step away from trading for like a little bit, and kind of reassess all of that. And at the time, I was kind of numb to the swings of stuff. So I don't think it got to me as much as it probably should have, honestly, which I guess is a good thing to some extent. But I can still, I'll never forget that feeling of looking at the screen when I came back and like, I wasn't sure, cause it was the price got to like very close to what I knew my liquidation price was. So I wasn't actually sure if it hit it or
that's
not.
The worst. That's
so
the
it
worst.
Was like this massive sweat when I go back to open the screen, and it was just, yeah, it was just no position, one ETH in the account or whatever it was. And it was like, wow. Like it was like,
we had
one
a guy,
of the most empty feelings.
We had a guy on the show, what was it, a month ago, who around that same sort of time, maybe slightly later actually, but during the FTX thing, yeah, lost tens of millions just in just in a couple of days. And he said the same thing. He just couldn't really believe it was real. Like, the money didn't really feel right. It was real on the way up. And then when it lost, he like kind of backed, like acted like it just didn't really happen. Like, it just didn't really feel. It's a strange thing when that sort of stuff happens, because that same feeling of you it go, being so parabolic on the way up, you just, I don't know. It's like in a football analogy, it's like you winning like 10-0 at halftime. You just cannot perceive that the other team can come back and score 10 goals. But like,
yeah,
it's exactly the same probability as it going up in that sort of parabolic way. Yeah, you just your brain just doesn't perceive those things, I don't think.
Yeah, it's one of the, and I think that's something that like trading can give you in a negative way that like poker never could. Like that's one of the reasons why I feel so like comfortable in poker relative to trading, because like I know there's risk management, but the amount that you can lose in a poker tournament is extremely finite, where it's like, okay, I'm going to play 100K and that's the entry. And if I lose, it's not like if I happen to play a really big pot, I lose like a million instead. It's just like 100K. You either win whatever or you lose 100K. And without like, and I think that's probably what I'm doing is probably emphasizing the value of like the risk management and keeping like, you know, stop losses and set like risk amounts per trade or whatever, is probably something that I did a very bad job of. And I'm sure a lot of people have as well. I feel like that's a very easy thing to do, because you just, I don't know, the mind is crazy. You can definitely talk yourself into all kinds of things. And that this was a perfect example of that, where it was just like, it was absolutely ridiculous that I was risking like over, I don't know, 20% of my account or something, like way too much money on one trade that was like in a market, in an environment where the price had just like 6x'd in like a few months. And it was just like, like in hindsight, I'm like, how stupid was I to think that like, oh, it could never go back down to only 5x the price that it was at, you know, a few months ago. Like it's actually comical in hindsight, but
crypto's like trading. It's powerful. Easy to move the goalposts. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, actually, when it does a 3x, you're always like, well, it could always do a 5x. Like it just goes that parabolic, these sort of things. That's really good advice. I mean, it's a really good story actually, particularly because it's like crossed us back into this space a little bit as well. But I think the bankroll management is something that I have, having spoken to so many different poker players now doing this series, like it's something that I've got much more perception of than I ever had before. I used to kind of be a bit all in, I think, in my trading style. But it's the discipline that everyone comes on here and says, like, that's the number one thing. Like, everyone, you can be brilliant at assessing risks. It's very, very clear. Like, we have so many people who come in here who are brilliant at assessing risks, but the really, really good players are the ones who do the bankroll management stuff. And that you can, again, you can apply that to many different things. It's kind of another life hack, I think, of being a good poker player, that you kind of can apply that to those different situations.
Yeah, 100%. And being that's like another thing. It's like being able not to be paralyzed by the understanding that something could go very wrong. Like, you can sit there and be like, yeah, this could be really bad, but like, I'm still gonna be level-headed and make the right decision. And just like, if it does happen, like, I'm just going to move on from there and know that this was one of the potential like outcome trees to truly like internalize that, I think is obviously easier said than done, but it's really important for both poker and trading.
Yeah, it's definitely a big overlap. Also, Bitcoin just squeezed back above the chop area. I covered while we were on the show, though. Rollbit has the proof of that. This is not a lie. Covered and got out, thank God, because we just squeezed back up. It's just chopping around like crazy. But
is there a headline?
No, it's just back. It just fucking goes down and then chops back up to 26. This, stuck in a range. This is where you should be bankroll managing and trading super small, which I actually am right now, which is feels nice, because if you're trading with big leverage or big size right here, you're not going to have a good day. It's going to be one of those 80% loss days it deals with the poker tournaments. But we have to kind of wrap it up here. We got one more question for you, and then we're going to do loot box spins. If you have time to stick around, Rollbit gives away some NFTs. Somebody won like a Pudgy Penguin worth 100K the other day. So It's we pick bring three winners up. But before we get to that, we ask the same question every show. It's just, I mean, we went over a couple of it, a couple ways, but how do you avoid getting wrecked in any arena, whether it's poker, life, trading? What's your best advice you're going to leave everyone with?
Leave some shells in the casing. You know, like you can't put everything on the table. That's really I think that's the only answer. Frankly, nobody's good enough to avoid it constantly if they're risking everything all the time or risking a significant portion all the time. And don't be like, overconfidence is really valuable in the sense that I think that it allows you to perform your best. However, if that pushes you towards poor bankroll management, and you know, leave your overconfidence to the decision-making process, and have there be a set of rules for the financial side of it, for like your size or whatever that is.
Yep. No, I agree. That's something Mando said, a lot of people come on and talk about, and I feel like I'm getting better just from being hosting this show at trying to do it myself, because I was definitely all in and firing such large rounds all the time that, you know, you go on a losing streak, and at those high levels of firing so big, and you find yourself with not many bullets left. It's not great, because there will be easy times and easy trades.
Yeah, that's the worst. The worst.
There's a headline.
The headline is ARK applies for Ethereum spot ETF.
There you go. Well, that was the up move. It almost got me, but no, I was paying attention and covered, and then now I'm going to go about my day with a small gain and not trade again today. Just hopefully, maybe I'm going to quit sports betting too after this show, because maybe.
Yeah, man, fuck that. Stop giving these people money.
I know. I just want it back from them, but that's another topic.
But you're probably never going to get it.
Yeah, no, I'm never going to get it back.